Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. Michael and I will share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael, or myself, or forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, your co-hosts, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
You there, sweetie?
So welcome to the show. Apologies for that. My computer decided all of a sudden it wanted to go slow. Today is Thursday, December the 8th, 2016. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that'll put you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
All right, welcome everybody. Once again, we are honored that you're here to spend this time with us, to invest of your day, to bring an understanding of this absolutely awesome ancient technology called forgiveness from the first century and all of the corollary tools that have developed around that process. And we're heading into the last couple of days of workshops here in Central Florida. We're actually at Unity in Fruitland Park, which is just about, 20 minutes or so south of Ocala, Florida. So if you're in Ocala or Orlando or St. Petersburg or Jacksonville, we're close. Come and play with us. Come and see us the next couple of nights. Tonight we're doing Naturopathic Keys to Health from 7 to 9 o'clock. Got a really sweet group of people that are gathering each evening. Tomorrow night, we're going to do codependence to interdependence, and then Saturday, we'll be doing mind shifters and still point breathing. Last night, we did the workshop, Empowered to Heal, and in that workshop, we do a chart that gives the tradition of the ancient naturopathic approach to how to understand what shuts down the energy system called a body to the point of death. And over the years, I've put together the Aramaic with this chart that comes out of naturopathic medicine, and then taken it to the next level of understanding what the mind energy is that shuts the system down. So I thought, you know, when we did that last night in the class, it just comes across so powerfully that I decided that what I do is go through that on the show today. Unless anybody's got any big urgent questions or thoughts, and if you do, then put your hand up and we'll check in with you first. But otherwise, we'll step in and look at the physiological effects of emotional suppression. So, Jenny, do you have any hands up?
We do not.
Okay, great. Well, then, let's take a look at this. And Jeannie, do we have this chart on the website?
Yes, it's underneath the worksheets. So if you click on the bullseye and then scroll down through the worksheets, it's on there.
So this sheet, if you want to jump on it with your computer and be looking at it as we talk about it, and that may help for questions to develop, the sheet is available if you go to either the bullseye or the first words on the top of the page, start here on the left-hand side. And then the second link ties you into worksheets. Scroll down and look at the worksheet or download the worksheet, the physiological effects of emotional suppression. And if we, as a starting point, understand that, you know, with the physicists, on Monday night we did the workshop. It's kind of like things are just assembling here in a new way. Monday night we did the workshop on Creating Consciously. And we talk about the physicists who are saying that matter is simply gathered, solidified light. That's what turns into this thing we call matter. And diseases and disorders in the so-called material realm, which is really just another energy realm, mean that we've been gathering energies that don't belong within the structure, and those energies that don't belong reflect as diseases or disorders. And if we tie that together with the opening words in the book of John, which we're told traditionally says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh, in Aramaic, that's not what it says at all. What it says is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. When you realize that what you do with your mind, and, you know, for centuries it's been thought that the body was divorced from the mind, but now we know that from the cell biologist laboratory, when you think a thought, that thought produces a literal neuropeptide, and along with it produces a feeling that warns you of the quality of the neuropeptide that you're engaging in. And that neuropeptide is an actual molecule that appears in your structure and circulates around in your structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. If the mind energy is mind energy that is off the mark, remember the Aramaic word sin means off the mark. If I'm on the archery range and I fire at the bullseye and I miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper simply yells, sin, you're off the mark, you missed. So when you realize that this so-called body, when Yeshua says you are the light of the world, what they're saying is your body is made of light. And there's a light-gathering organ within your brain that is shut down when you don't live as a true human being. So we're designed to live as human beings and have our power supply and our thoughts come from the truth of who we are, which is love. So we're designed to be linked eternally to this eternal force of love. And if we're there, then human life looks like enthusiasm. It looks like I love life, I'm excited. You know, if you go to the Greek root of enthusiasm, it's entheos, which means in love, in the Creator. Now, think about a newborn child, and you get a sense of that newborn energy that becomes our birthright, to live in that full human form, that full human expression of love, power, genius, and aliveness. That's what you're designed for. And when you're in that state, you are enthusiastic about everything, enthusiasm, entheos. I mean, look at the two-year-old, the three-year-old child, a baby. They can get enthused about what's in their diaper and painting it on the wall. So, you know, enthusiasm is a natural state. Somebody has to tell them bad, wrong, and introduce to them the mind energy of sin, the mind energy that is off the mark, and will begin the deterioration of the body to the point where we think that if somebody lives 100 years, they lived a long lifetime. And yet, we have records of people living 800 and 900 years. If we listen to Yeshua, he says, and Yeshua, of course, is the actual Aramaic name of the man that's been called by the Greeks, Jesus. Not his name, clearly not his name. But Yeshua taught a system for understanding how that whole process of disease and death and suffering was engaged in and how to reverse the process. It does not matter what stage of, if one is in a state of disease or suffering, it does not matter what state they are in. If they are 30 seconds from the precipice of death, if energetically they start to reverse the energy flow in their own structures, then they will step away from that precipice and they'll be a minute from death, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, and ultimately 20, 30, 50, and who knows how many years. If we go to Revelations, we hear Yeshua saying, To he that overcomes, he will not taste of the second death. He will become a pillar in the temple of my Creator. What is the temple? It's your body. What is a pillar? It's a fixture. And it clearly says, he will go out no more. What is going out of the temple? It's death. Is it possible that we were actually made for eternal life, and we've been taught to integrate mind energy based in error from the very beginning of our lives, and that's why we suffer, we have diseases, we create diseases, and we die? Now, I might be all wet with that thought. I might be totally and completely wrong, but I guarantee you, if you engage in that line of thinking, it will do you no harm. If I'm correct, if Yeshua was correct, if you don't engage in that line of thinking, it will do you great harm, and you will die in the tradition of your ancestors. We're looking to reverse that. You go back to the ancient scriptures, the way they understood the energy system, and they said the wages of sin is death. That wasn't some kind of, you know, theological threat. God's going to get you for your sins. They were just saying, here's how the energy system works, folks. If you engage in something that doesn't belong, then you integrate, you bring into your system an energy that will begin to degrade your tissue structure. You spend a whole lifetime doing that, and it looks like it's age that's overtaken you, but I'd offer it is not age. It is the integration of and the amplification, the intensification of thoughts based in something other than love, based in some form of hostility or fear. So my offering is that when disintegrative energy is introduced into a cell, it locks into that cell and creates a disturbance on the cellular level. When we shut down, when we engage in, and there's a tradition in our culture that's quite traceable, if you look at this chart, of the kinds of thoughts that a child is introduced to, the kind of mind energy that a child is introduced to that ultimately kills them. It was interesting as I was going through this chart last night in the class, after the class, there was a gentleman that came up to me and he said, "And you know, the last step in the chart is unconsciousness that shuts down the reproductive organs." And it was kind of funny and interesting. This gentleman came up to me and he said, "I'm 73 years old and I have not had any form of arousal or sexual interaction in years." And he said, "Here I am sitting in this class and I'm facing stuff and all of a sudden, something's moving in me." The last end energy that kills people is the energy of unconsciousness. Unconsciousness looks like, I don't know, I'm hopeless, I'm helpless. And that energy gets stored in the gonads, in the testicles, in the female generative organs. When that energy shuts down those organs, death soon ensues. We think it's got something to do with time. We call it aging. The fact that we engage systematically in disintegrative energy over a period of time makes it look like it has to do with aging, but my offering is it's got nothing to do with time. It's got nothing to do with aging. It is learned, self-imposed dis-ease energies that cause the deterioration of the system. And what we're looking to do is to empower people to understand that process and to empower people to remove the energetic dynamics that don't belong in the structure. So one starts out in enthusiasm. I usually, when I do this workshop, I tell a story about being on an airplane and sitting in the aisle, the window seat. And, you know, there are three seats beside each other, and I'm sitting in the window seat. And in the row behind me, a mom shows up with her son, who's probably, I don't know, three or four. And this little guy is obviously very, very excited. He's on an airplane. I don't know whether it was his first ride or what, but he is so excited that he cannot sit still. And, of course, the little three or four-year-old that's on the move is going to kick the seat in front of him, just part of the game on an airplane. Still businessman in his business suit looking all prim and proper and successful and, you know, the image of the guy who's got it made sits in the seat, in the aisle, and every time this kid's foot hits his seat, he just tightens his grip on the armchair, on the armrests, and his jaw tightens, and it's easy to see that he is in a fit of rage. And every time this kid's foot hits his seat, now I'm sitting there watching, and it's just delightful to watch this little guy and how excited he is. He's in enthusiasm. Now, this guy who was probably, I don't know, in his 40s, or late 40s, early 50s, the epitome of so-called success, within 2 or 3 minutes was in such a fit of rage that it wouldn't have surprised me if he turned around and just smashed this little kid behind him. Why? Well, I can only imagine that probably he was a 3-year-old at some point. And in his enthusiasm and aliveness, because the people around him were not able or willing to handle the pain of that level of aliveness, had to shut the aliveness down so they didn't have to feel what was locked in them, and smashed him down. And here he is, I don't know, 50 or so years later, ready to smash down a little 3 or 4 year old kid and shut down his enthusiasm. When enthusiasm gets shut down, when that aliveness and that excitement gets shut down, the child tends to, and we want to look at what kind of thought goes along with this. The child tends to think thoughts like, what's wrong with me? You know, all I'm doing is just excited, enthused, and this adult is puking all over me. So the kind of mind, remember, mind energy becomes flesh. When we think a thought, that thought becomes a literal molecule and inserts itself in the cell as so-called chemistry. So now, this child, as a result of his enthusiasm and being shut down, puts in his cellular structure the thought, what's wrong with me? And along with that come thoughts of guilt and shame. So how many times have you seen an adult shame a child? And the child begins to learn to think, and or has resonated from his genes, degrading thoughts of self. When one begins to think that in the space where enthusiasm is being shut down, all of that energy locks into the pineal gland. Now, the pineal gland is a gland that gathers light. I'm not sure exactly how it all works, but I suspect that's the gatherer in the human structure of the energy that the physicists say becomes matter, and that is the gathering of light. So the pineal gland is where the light is gathered and organized according to the thoughts running the system. And if the thoughts are, what's wrong with me, degrading thoughts of self with guilt and shame, then the pineal gland begins to dysfunction. Now, when that occurs, for a little 3, 4, 5, 6, 10-year-old child, that's painful. There's a huge amount of pain that goes hand in hand with that. But of course, we live in a culture that says, we're not allowed to experience our pain. Were you ever given this line? If you don't stop crying, I'll give you something to cry for. You ever get that from an adult that was 10 times your size? You know, maybe you were 25 pounds, and here's this person who's, you know, 6 to 10 times bigger than you are. It turns to you and says, if you don't stop that crying, I'll give you something to cry for. I can remember being a kid going, excuse me, I'm crying. I have something to cry for. I really don't need anything else. But the intimidation that comes with that when the child's not allowed to experience their pain now goes into thoughts like, this hurts. I'm not allowed to feel, and steps into humiliation. That, when suppressed, locks into, in the naturopathic tradition, locks into the pituitary gland. The child who's not allowed their enthusiasm and not allowed to feel their pain now tends to become quite antagonistic. In fact, they call it the terrible twos. Why the terrible twos? Because at this point, the child's been filled with what's wrong with me, guilt, shame, degrading thoughts, this hurts, I'm not allowed to feel, And so antagonism becomes the result. The child goes into antagonism and vengeance and says, I'll get you, and becomes threatening. Now, you know, they say kids can be very vicious. No, human children are not vicious. Those who've lost connection to their enthusiasm and their being, the truth of who they are, hold a newborn child and you get what a human is. Those who've lost contact with that and are swimming in literally the so-called chemistry in their cells of what's wrong with me, guilt, shame, degraded, I'm degraded, this hurts, I'm not allowed to feel, I'm humiliated. That tends to turn into those terrible twos, that vengeance, I will get you, and threat. Of course, when that happens, somebody, again, 8 to 20 times bigger than the child, pounces on them, fists, belt, switches, and make sure they shut that down. We have a young lady in St. Louis that teaches this work, who's been teaching for the last 25 years or so, 20 years, and she teaches conscious parenting classes. Suzanne Tucker, you've probably heard her on the show. And she was sharing with us, actually on the show a couple of years ago, how she had a parenting class and she was talking about punishment. And the mother shared that she had stopped punishing her son. And the reason she stopped punishing him was because they had a family tradition where if the child was going to be punished, the child had to go out and cut their own switch. I'm always shocked how many people, when I say that in a class full of people, shake their heads and go, yeah, that's what we had to do too. I am shocked at how many people had to do that. And this was a woman's son, 5 or 6 years of age, goes out to cut a switch, comes back in crying a few minutes later, says, Mom, I couldn't reach any branches on a tree to get a switch, so here, I brought you some rocks to throw at me. Let that touch your feeling, nature. A 5-year-old that says, Mom, the person who's designed to cherish you most, I brought you rocks to throw at me. What did the child learn by being punished, by being beaten, by being hit? The child learned that this person who is supposed to love me wants to hurt me. And so they return the favor. And when the antagonism isn't allowed, that's when the child is switched. Then the child goes into overt hostility. And the thought, the thinking that is integrated into the cells with overt hostility is, I will hurt you. Now, the child is at a point where there are no inhibitors in his brain yet. He hasn't been structured with, you stop this behavior, and that's what people do with punishment. It's insane. What the child needs is discipline, and discipline does not mean properly beat up. The word discipline comes from the word disciple. It means properly taught. But the child at this point now buys into the overt hostility, and I will hurt you, and will strike out, bite, kick, hit any adult that's around or any other child, because there are no inhibitors for that. And when that overt hostility is shut down by someone hitting back or by punishment or biting back, then the tendency is to shift into anger. There's so much pain that the drug of anger is needed to anesthetize the pain and to inhibit the overt hostility and the antagonism, the vengeance, the I'll get you, I'll hurt you. And with that anger, of course, the adult can express their anger, but the child can't. This is how the disease process progresses. Remember, we've shut down the pineal, we've shut down the pituitary. Now the child goes into thoughts like, I must hide my rage or they'll kill me. Literally, that's the kind of thinking that happens for the child. I remember working with a woman back about 30 years ago, and she was from a large family, and she shared with me in a session how her father had told her she was one of the oldest kids in the family, was supposed to clean up some cat droppings. And under her breath, she kind of grumbled, why do I always have to do everything here? And this woman is now in her 50s, is in shattered tears as she's recalling how at the age of 10, she actually thought, with the beating that her father was giving her, that he was actually going to kill her. I mean, think about that. And so the tendency is that the anger becomes the anesthetic. And, of course, when the anger isn't allowed expression, as I said, dad can do it, mom can do it, but the kid can't. When the anger isn't allowed expression, then the thyroid gland, the energy of that anger and the thoughts of I must hide my rage or they'll kill me, tend to walk into the thyroid and start the deterioration of the thyroid gland. At this point, the child has learned that antagonism doesn't work, overt hostility doesn't work, anger doesn't work, so we'll go to covert hostility. So the child has had inhibitors put in, and those inhibitors now, you'll notice that the 2-, 3-, 4-year-old, unless they've really been abused, is out there, they express, they'll stand in front of you and sing, no shyness whatsoever, no inhibitors. But when these inhibitors that shut down the enthusiasm, the pain, the antagonism, the overt hostility, when those inhibitors are put in, shut down the anger, the child begins to be shy. It's inhibited. It's shut down. So the child at this stage tends to go into covert hostility and goes into the next level of disease. And covert hostility looks like, oops, oh, mom, you know, I was trying to get your attention on the phone and 3 times you just blew me off. So, gee, I really didn't mean to break your new lamp, your new favorite lamp. Covert hostility. Now, one of the reasons for understanding this is that as you go through the healing process, you'll see yourself going through these kinds of dynamics as you unfold and undo. You know, if you were looking at the chart, you'd see an arrow that's going down, and as we're going down this ladder, this is the death ritual in America. This is how people kill themselves. And these are the kinds of thoughts and energies that a person's going to have to deal with to come up the other side and to heal. So as you're coming up the other side, you're going to get things that are going to come forward like covert. You ever watch somebody doing covert stuff? Or rage or hostility. To get back to the enthusiasm, there's going to have to be some tools and some healing that's done. So once the covert hostility, the adult catches onto it and shuts that one down, then the child tends to live in fear. And the kind of thinking, the mind energy that becomes flesh in that child is, I'm terrified that I'm going to be hurt again. And, of course, what is said to the child? Oh, be a big boy. Be a man like your dad. Don't feel. Don't be in fear. I mean, we just intimidated you to the max. And I only weigh, at this point, you know, 8 times as much as you two. But don't be in fear. And the child shuts down that terror that's within. And that terror begins to shut down and destroy the thymus gland. Gets locked into the thymus. Now, the thymus gland is the gland that modulates immunity. And it's interesting, as late as the 1950s, if physicians had occasion to crack a child's chest, or maybe had to do heart surgery or something, they did thymectomies on young children with healthy thymus glands because the thymus glands were so huge that they were thought to be diseased. The truth was that the thymus gland is huge compared to the average adult that has maybe a walnut-sized thymus gland. But most doctors were only used to seeing this walnut-sized thymus gland and thought that was a normal one. But actually, they've shown that the thymus gland can shrink as much as 50% in one 24-hour episode of fear. So when one's in that, I'm terrified that I'm going to be hurt again, it's literally an energy that's locking into and shrinking the thymus gland and compromising immunity. Once one is at that stage of thinking, I'm terrified I'm going to be hurt again, it becomes either rebellion and stays in around that antagonism, overt, covert hostility, or it becomes what we call propitiation. Propitiation is kind of an interesting word. It's not used very often in this culture. But T.S. Eliot has a short poem that he offers to people so you remember the definition of propitiation. And T.S. Eliot says, "'Tis the highest treason to do the right thing for the wrong reason." So you watch the child, and this especially happens with the child coming out of church. I want to do something, but they said I'd go to hell. They forced me. They terrorized me. They didn't discipline me and properly teach me. They beat me into submission, verbally, emotionally, and sometimes physically. So now the child in propitiation is saying things inside of themselves. The mind energy that's becoming so-called chemistry in the cell is, I'm being forced and I hate it. Now, as we're doing this, you can see that at any stage when someone doesn't want to deal with that, like if somebody's at that antagonism stage, you'll notice they'll take them to the doctor and they'll put them on pills to shut it down. Oh, we know how to control this child. We'll just fry their brain with drugs. Because we don't know how to deal with it. We don't know where it came from. We have no idea what to do. And those drugs can definitely stop feelings, but the cost is that you can't leave a functioning immune system in a system that's being compromised with drugs. So the mind energy that goes into the child tends to go with this next step beneath fear. Is I'm being forced and I hate it, and now hate becomes a part of the energy system inside of the child, and their chemistry starts to shift in that direction. Once one goes past that stage, then it becomes about sympathy. You'll notice how big an industry sympathy is in our culture. I mean, walk into the drugstore or the, you know, any big store, and there are whole stores devoted to cards. And a significant amount of those are devoted to sympathy. Now, sympathy is a degraded thought form. And it goes like this. The thought that goes with sympathy is, I have pain like yours. Let's intensify our pain by suffering together. I suggest that if you have someone who's in a state of loss, and there is pain and loss in you, that before you start approaching them and suffering with them, you do your work. You've got the tools. And you then come to them as a space of active love, offering support and healing, offering to be the space rather than getting lost in the shared suffering. Loss in shared suffering simply reinforces suffering and creates more of these energetic dynamics within the cell and the aging, disease, and deterioration process. The next step, when one is carrying that kind of pain, they've been forced to do things, they're hiding from themselves, the next step is it begins to dawn, consciously or unconsciously, the depth of the loss of their human lives. And the depth of the loss of their human lives results in grief. And that grief is simply a state where one is overburdened and hurting. So the thought that goes with this grief is, I'm sad, I'm overburdened, and I'm hurting. But there's usually no awareness, because this person has been taught denial all along, that their hurt is a result, their sadness, their feeling overburdened is a result of their own unconscious, self-imposed, dissociated pain. We've not been taught that. So it's the pain realized consciously or unconsciously over the loss of their own human lives. Now the child may seem to be well adapted, and that is still an unconscious dynamic if this routine has been followed, which is pretty much the tradition of this culture. Now, of course, if grief is there, somebody will rush somebody off to the doctor and say, oh, I just had a big loss, I've got so much grief, and the doc says, oh, here, I have a pill for you, we can get rid of that. Boom. Now, 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years, 60 years later, if you take away the pill, the grief is still there. The thoughts are still there. Nothing changed those. So when one suppresses and or, you know, we have such a plethora of drugs in our culture, well, let's just go get a sugar fix. Sugar is a more disastrous drug than cocaine. Caffeine, nicotine, junk food, all kinds of drugs available to shut down the feeling of that grief. And the primary key here is the depth of pain over the loss of being. So that energy, when it's not given room to process, not able to deal with it, when one isn't taught to live as the presence of love and embrace that energy and work through it, then that energy tends to lock into the pancreas and the adrenals. And you'll notice that the number one complaint that people have going to the doctor is, I have no energy. The adrenals supply that energy. The other major disorder that especially with children today, is epidemic. You know, they used to call it adult onset diabetes because people didn't usually accumulate enough unresolved grief to destroy their pancreases until they were adults. But today, the children have rampant epidemic diabetes. So that it's not even called adult onset anymore. It's just type 2. And what's happened is that energy is locked into the pancreas and begins to create the dysfunction of the pancreas. So the pancreas can no longer regulate sugar and the adrenals can no longer regulate energy. Once that's shut down, then one's pretty much getting to the feeling of hopeless and helpless. And that means apathy. You know, you look at how many people in our culture, well, you know, I'm just one person. I can't do anything about this. Why are they doing this to me again? I'm a hopeless, helpless victim. We suggest if that's some of what you're seeing in yourself, you might want to watch the Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment video and start to tap into an energy that will literally, as you bring it powerfully into your structure, throw off these overlays. But apathy, the feeling of hopelessness. And the reason there's hopelessness is the whole energy system and the endocrine system has been so shut down that one can't feel the flow of power through them. So when one starts to think there's nothing meaningful I can do, and think of themselves as a victim, then that energy tends to lock into the spleen and people end up with blood disorders. The final step, if one doesn't reconcile with their purpose, acquire some tools and begin to do their work and throw off and change this mind energy running their system, is that they simply slip into unconsciousness. And the kind of thinking that goes with unconsciousness is, I don't know, I have no idea, I'm in a fog, I don't understand. And that's mass unconsciousness. And that unconsciousness locks into the reproductive organs and shuts down reproduction. Life will not reproduce death. And at that point, the system says, you're not allowed to reproduce anymore. We're going to shut you down totally. The thinking that goes along with that, once again, is I don't know. I have no idea. I'm hopeless. I'm helpless. I'm in a fog. I don't understand. Why are they doing this to me? Why am I a victim? What's going on here? And so that's the death ritual in America and in Western, and actually pretty much the whole Western culture. The solution is that you start anywhere in the chart that you are at any given moment and you begin to apply the tool of forgiveness. Remember that forgiveness is the tool of removal. Forgiveness has nothing to do with me letting you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. So we lay this out with the organs involved and the thoughts that go with it so that you'll have some idea of what your healing process is going to look like. Because on one hand, going down that, just progressively going into that deeper and deeper pain and thought, is the disease, the death process. It's how people kill themselves. And when you acquire tools and you start to say, okay, well, I'm ready to throw this yoke off, I'm ready to go in the opposite direction, then healing looks like going back through. Ah, I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah, I've been learning about how this works. I know how this works. My fog is gone. I understand. Now unconsciousness is gone. Then am I hopeless anymore now that I understand? No, I have personal power. I realize I can do something about this, even if it's a global problem. I can remember when my son was born 37 years ago, looking around at the world and saying, you know, if somebody doesn't do something, this is not going to be a place for my children to grow up. I looked around and I was the only one standing there, and this work that you listen to every day on the radio show, this is what I've done. You can do that too. You can be empowered to do what it takes to change what happens around you and in your world. And you can have a global impact because you have as much personal power as any human being that has ever existed. What is personal power? I'd offer that personal power is the ability to be continuously aware of and function out of your highest guidance, rather than these emotionalized thoughts that have been locked into your system by a culture that is unconscious in the way it raises children. And you'll go back through, so that apathy, there'll come a stage where as you start to wake up, it'll be like, well, I'm still hopeless. So there's my next worksheet. There's my next forgiveness project. But I've got so much suffering and so much pain. I'm so sad. I'm so hurt. So now I'm going to start to apply forgiveness to my sadness, to my hurt, and my feeling overburdened. And then I look around and I see people that I could sympathize with, and instead of sympathizing, I empathize and I hold a space of love. Instead of I have pain like yours, let's intensify our pain and suffering together. It's like, gee, you know, it looks to me like you might have a pain that's matching something. Is that accurate? Is that what you're going through? Well, I know how to heal that. I know what we can do about that. Let's join in doing worksheets. Let's do some forgiveness work and get through that. And there will always be, if you want to see a really powerful example of this, propitiation. I'm being forced and I hate it. If you haven't seen it, we've talked about it two or three times since it came out about 2 weeks ago. Go and see the movie Hacksaw Ridge. You will see a human life that they try to do all of this with him, and he refuses to play. He refuses to give up his human life, and it's a true story about a young man who felt like he needed to go and volunteer for World War II, but he would not touch a gun and he would not kill. And the propitiation, the things they tried to force him to do, the ways they tried to force him, I mean, they beat on him, they put him in prison, they degraded him in every way they could, and he just kept coming back as a human being. It's a very powerful example of watching a human being in a real circumstance in the real world, the most violent, insane world you can imagine, in the middle of the battlefield. And yet here's this human being with all the tough guys, you know, we've got this military thing that says no man left behind, when all the tough guys ran off of the battlefield and disappeared, this one human life kept appealing to the Creator and saying, help me find just one more. And he single-handedly pulled 75 men off of this ridge that was a hellfire. All the tough guys at the bottom of the ridge that are saying, where are these people coming from, these injured men? Not one of the tough guys climbed up the ridge to help him. Single-handedly, a human being, a true human being, got a Medal of Honor for it. Pulled 75 injured men off the ridge while the tough guys sat down below, stayed down below where they were safe. Powerful, powerful expression of someone who says, I can do something. It doesn't matter what you've tried to force me to do. Yes, I've been terrified and I've been hurt and I'm going to work through it. Powerful example of someone who stands as a human being and gives us an example of what we can do. And, of course, this chart gives you some idea of the kinds of things, if you find yourself somewhere down on the chart in unconsciousness or apathy or grief or sympathy, propitiation, if you find yourself doing your life because, well, I'm supposed to do that, I really don't want to, I'm being forced and I hate it, then you're at the level of propitiation. And so you start to work through that being forced energy and you start to stand up and speak up and you change the game. That's the whole idea of this work. So that's what we're here to do. That's what we're here to share with you. We are honored by the fact that you're here to share this space with us, and I'd like to open the floor to say hello to Dr. Tim and see if he has any thoughts on the physiological effects of emotional suppression and or any other comments from what's happening in practice today, what kind of things you're observing. Dr. Tim?
He was on, and now he is not. So.
Okay. And Dr. Tim had to leave, I guess.
Yeah, and nobody has a hand up, so if somebody presses one, we have 14 minutes. We've got plenty of time.
Well, and I guarantee that if I were in your town presenting this chart, if I'd just gone through this chart that I shared with you at your local university or library or theater or church, that when I came down off of the stage, having said this, you'd have some questions for me. What would you be walking over to say, Michael, I just have a quick question. That's what virtually everybody says. I just have a quick question. What would your question be if I were there in your town and you were to come up afterward and you'd want to know something about what I just presented? What would your question be? And your question is everybody's question. So we would appreciate hearing your question so that we can share a deeper level of understanding of these tools and how the process of being empowered to heal works. And if we don't have any questions, then let me just talk a little bit more about this idea of resonance, and that as a human resonance energy field, every thought that you've stored in your structure, the reason you can remember it is because it is an energy that's there and moves. All energy, by definition, is motion. And so the reason you can remember something is because there is an energy stored in brain cells that can be amplified so that you become aware of it. Now, as you walk through the world, you know, think about this law of resonance. And the law of resonance simply says that when two energy systems are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an exchange of information between them. The stronger of the two systems transfers some of its energy to the weaker, and the weaker is strengthened as a result. So if I have a middle C tuning fork and I hit it on a desk and I put it in front of another middle C tuning fork, what happens to the second tuning fork? It starts to vibrate. Doesn't have to be touched because the atomic magnetic structures of the two is the same. There's an exchange of information between them. Well, in precisely the same way, if one is a walking field of I don't know, I have no idea, I'm in a fog, I don't understand, there's nothing meaningful I can do, I'm hopeless, I'm helpless, I'm sad, I'm overburdened, I've got pain, I'm being forced, I hate it, I'm terrified, oops, I didn't mean to do that, I will hurt you, vengeance. If one lives carrying those energetic patterns moving in them, then one sets up an energy field where wherever they go, they inspire disease and suffering by their simple presence. Remember the character Little Abner that had the black cloud over his head? That's what they were talking about. The person who is a walking disease field. Now, if you found yourself there, if you know people who are in that space, and you're disturbed by people being in that space, then your mind's in denial because you can't be disturbed by people being in that space. You can only be disturbed by what moves in you that is disturbed, and they've given you an opportunity to learn forgiveness. And as one chooses to do the work of forgiving and removing these things, then instead of walking through the world inspiring and resonating disease everywhere they go, by choosing to live in their enthusiasm and as the presence of love, then they inspire love wherever they go. And the whole game changes. The key to the process is, how do you forgive? How do you remove those things that don't belong? You'll notice that the world that's filled with suffering, that has no clue what forgiveness is, tells you that, of course, you're only suffering because of somebody else. It's their fault, but you should just forgive them. My offering is, when you let someone else off the hook for what's happening inside of you, you have not forgiven, you've pardoned, which can be appropriate and a nice thing to do, but it's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is the act of consciously, purposely going inside yourself and removing what never belonged within you in the first place. As you do that, then you become a different walking energy field. You become a field of healing. Wherever you go, because of your aliveness and enthusiasm and the fact that you've worked through every degrading thought that has been put into your genes or has been put into your mind or your emotions, then by standing as that space of love wherever you go, you literally resonate different energetic patterns in people. And that's what Empowered to Heal is about. A walking disease field is an inspiration to everybody to intensify through resonance their diseases. You know, if I hit a middle C tuning fork and I put it in front of a middle A tuning fork, nothing happens. Why? Because there's no resonance. If one is filled with these unconscious thoughts, then they tend to resonate those same thoughts in other people. If one has the courage to step in and do the work, and if you haven't engaged in the forgiveness process yet, we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org. And start out by going to the right side of the page, and you'll see the social media links. The bottom one is YouTube. Click on the YouTube link, and then look up two videos in particular. The first one you want to look at has a picture of the world, like a blue planet from space, as an icon. And the title of it is ACIM, What is the World? How do we forgive? 39 minutes. Watch that video. It'll knock your socks off. Then there's a second link. There are over 100 videos there, so you're going to have to look through it to find them. But the next video that we're going to invite you to watch is the icon is not the blue planet from space, but rather is a copy of my book. So it's square and blue and red, basically, book cover. The title of that particular video, it's 22 minutes long, is PowerPoint. It starts out with the word PowerPoint. So at least watch the What is the World, ACIM, What is the World, What is Forgiveness, or How do we Forgive, and the PowerPoint. Watch those two, and you will have a firm idea of what forgiveness is and reverse the ideas that the world has given you about forgiveness. Then we invite you to go back to the main page, and in the upper left-hand corner, there's two words. They start here. Click those two words, start here, and that'll open a whole series of links. The first link will give you chapter 24 of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, a free download. There's also a free download of the whole book. By the way, at the center of the top of each page, there's a link for our mailing list. If you are not currently on our mailing list and you would like a free copy of an MP3 of the latest version of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, if you sign up for our mailing list, we'll send you a copy of the book that you can listen to on your phone or your iPad or your computer or wherever. So all you have to do is sign up for our mailing list. We'll send you an MP3 of the book, so you'll have the whole text of the latest version of the book. But once you've hit that Start Here button, go through the links. The second link will give you the actual wake-up sheet. Actually, there are a number of worksheets there, but we suggest to start with the first one on the list. And then the third link will take you into some of our most important radio shows. And in particular, there are, I believe, now 17 radio shows where either Dr. Tim or Jeannie or myself has walked somebody through the whole forgiveness process. So we invite you to start there. And then as you start to actually use the worksheet, which may appear to be confusing at first, but it's really pretty simple. If you have questions about it, 5 days a week, 1 till 2 o'clock Eastern Time, we're here to support you in understanding how this process works and calling into the radio show in order to get your questions answered. Gee, how does this work? How do I do this? How do I do that? And if you want to call into the show, the paperwork, by and large, that's out there right now has an incorrect phone number because recently our guest call-in phone number has changed. So the call-in number now is area code 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. So if you're listening to this radio show and you need support, assistance, if you go through those other steps and you need support in understanding the tools, then pick up the phone from 1 till 2 o'clock and let's have a conversation. We're here to support you. Beyond that, if you're ready to take your work to the next level, again, if you're in the Fruitland Park Villages area of Florida, we'll be doing Naturopathic Keys to Health tonight, Codependence to Interdependence tomorrow night, 7 to 9 o'clock each evening, free open workshops Saturday. It is the one workshop we travel that we charge a fee for. It's $125 for the day. We'll start 8 in the morning, go through till 6 at night. I promise you it will change your life. It'll be one of the most powerful days you've had in your eternal life. Beyond that, Jeannie will be doing two ladies' intensives exclusively for women. The first one will start on March the 3rd, Jeannie? I don't have the list in front of me. So do you want to talk about those two intensives, the third and then the following one?
Okay, so I was just opening up the schedule so I'd have everything exact. So the first one is called De-Stressing or 5-Day De-Stress Women's Retreat, and we're going to have a yoga teacher who is also a raw foodist, and she's going to be taking us through early morning yoga on the beach and meditation, and then we'll be talking about getting the stress you need. We'll be doing the forgiveness work and mind shifter still point breathing. That's a 5-day. It goes from Friday to Tuesday. Wednesday we have off, and if anyone registers for either of these intensives, they can stay for that day that's off just as a vacation day for $75. That includes your meals, accommodation, everything. If they register for both, the day in the middle is free. The second one starts on March the 9th. It goes from Thursday to Sunday, and it's a 4-day Women Healing Women, and that's the one that I normally do, which covers the forgiveness work, healing through relationships, codependence, power person, and we address a lot of women's issues around abuse and things like that. So things that a lot of women want to talk about, but not in front of mixed company. So it's a safe space, and it's in a beautiful place. And then we'll move into Michael's intensives with Ari. And do you have those, or do you want me to go through those dates?
All right, well, I know the date of the first one, it's a 9-day intuitive development, working on developing the intuitive faculty. And it'll be a practicum. We'll do why is this happening to me again, the forgiveness process. We'll do mind shifters and still point breathing on the total fresh and raw diet. And by the way, this is on right on. We've got a 7-bedroom, 6.5-bath house right on the beach in Oak Island, just south of Wilmington, North Carolina. So we'll be doing these intensives right on the beach and or a house right on the beach. And so it starts March 17th. St. Paddy's Day is the first day of the intuitive development intensive, and then that will go through the 25th, and then we'll step into a 4-day codependence to interdependence, and from there we'll go into a 9-day course in miracles, and there are some days off in between. I don't have the dates. Maybe if we've got time you could repeat them, but if you register for intensives on either side of those days off, then as Dean said, if you just do one of the intensives, one side or the other, then it's $75 a day to stay clean. But if you register for an intensive on both sides of a day or two off that we have, then you get those days free on the beach with this awesome fresh and raw food and the chance to hang out and kind of just play on the beach and share some time. We'll be doing some spontaneous classes as part of that. And one of the things I'm planning to do is to include at some point in that process, for people who might choose to do the whole 6 weeks, we'll be doing hands-on energy field work, which is something we normally only teach in our Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive. So if you're interested in that, you can give me a call on my cell, 954-205-4996. And we're just about out of time, so I'm going to say have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's a blessing to give the world. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, as we present the Aramaic Internal Process of Forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.